This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:07 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. And first up, the recent case of a woman, Sarah Everard, who went missing in the United Kingdom, has prompted renewed conversations on women and safety. And that's something that we wanted to talk about through a Malaysian context today.
So just to catch you up, Sarah Everard basically went missing on the 3rd of March. She left her friend's house at 9 p.m., should have reached home after a 50-minute walk, but then she never made it, basically. And on Tuesday, a suspect was arrested. He was a police officer in his 40s, and he's suspected to have kidnapped and murdered her, particularly following the fact that on Wednesday, human remains had been found that were thought to belong to Sarah, rather sadly.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I think subsequently, the way that this story has been covered and the reactions that it's prompted on social media is partly why we're talking about it today. Because I think any time there is a case like this in which you have a woman who was alone, particularly a woman alone at night, you get the response. And I often think it's well-meaning, but you get this response nonetheless. Oh, why was she alone at night? Or why did she choose to go walking at night? And I think that that has prompted this whole groundswell of response from women on social media, sharing all the things that they've done over the years in order to stay or feel safe, or how, despite the fact that you may be doing everything quote unquote correctly, that might still not be enough. And that's a very draining way to live and a very unequal way to live if the responsibility for your safety is constantly placed only upon people who have been victimized and not necessarily the people doing the victimizing.
Mm. And when you say well-meaning, actually, I don't think a lot of people realize how tiring it is to constantly hear, here are the things you can do to be safe. Mm. We already know most of the time we've had these things drummed into us since we were children. And that's why we are seeing more and more people, at least to start talking about, why do we constantly talk about what women should do to be safe? Why don't we talk about what men, who predominantly are the aggressors in these cases, why don't we talk about how men need to be educated? Why don't we talk about how men need to be taught what women go through or what they feel? And so that's coming on the wake of, I think, just a general awareness or an increase of awareness around the world that the world isn't a safe place for women. By and large, there's so much anxiety in just being able to do something like walk home from your friend's house at night.
Yes. And I think actually the photo of Sarah Everard, the last one seen, I think, as she was leaving her friend's house, it's of a woman who, essentially leaving the lobby of an apartment building. And part of the reason why it's been circulated so much is that women have actually been using it as a textbook example of quote-unquote doing things correctly. She was wearing brightly coloured clothing. She was wearing flat shoes so that she should have been able to move quickly, run if needed. She had her phone in her hand, so she should have been able to call. And so, again, I think these are ones, this is a time where you look at the circumstance and you think to yourself, okay, here you have somebody who has done everything, again, quote unquote, correctly, and yet ultimately, and very sadly, never made it home. And so the ways we talk, I think, really matter. And to go back to that idea of well-meaning, whenever I've had this conversation with people in my life, I think the struggle has always been this idea of personal responsibility. So the argument often comes that it is your personal responsibility to keep yourself safe. And that because the world is inherently an unsafe place for women, therefore women have to take more responsibility in doing so. And I think one of the ways in which we don't consider how that impacts people is it makes your world very small. It means that you know, unless you are accompanied, unless you are only going out during the day, like some sort of reverse vampire, you know, that there's no other way to keep safe. And I think it's a very limiting way to live.
And just to draw your attention to what the situation might be like here in Malaysia. So there is a survey back in 2019 by YouGov Omnibus that says 1 in 3 Malaysian women have experienced sexual harassment. That's 1 in 3. So if you know 3 women, that's a good chance that one of them at least has experienced sexual harassment. And out of those, only 53%, and this includes both men and women really, only 53% of people who face sexual harassment actually reported it or told someone about it. And in a survey conducted on the safest countries in the Asia Pacific region, Malaysia comes in at 10, which means we're not too bad. There are other countries that are less safe than us, but there's still much that we could be doing in terms of improving just general safety for women. And I think some of those things like education, things like access to healthcare, all of these feed into why we keep talking about this from the perspective of what women can do rather than what are the larger things that are not being done.
So do you think that Malaysia is a safe space, a safe place, really, for women? What have you done in the past to feel safer, whether it is carrying your car key between your fingers, whether it's having pepper spray on you, whether it's texting a friend, all these things? Let us know and tell us what would actually help. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we will be speaking with Amelia Sharif, Chief Executive Editor of the G-Blog. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:14 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. We are talking today about how the way we talk about women's safety matters. This is coming after the case of a missing woman, Sarah Everard, in the United Kingdom, has prompted all these conversations now about women sharing the ways in which they've had to adjust their lives in order to stay safe and why we need to shift that conversation. If you'd like to weigh in, what are your thoughts on how safe you feel in Malaysia? What have you done in the past to feel safer? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Amelia Sharif, Chief Executive Editor at the G-Blog. Amelia, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's get straight to the point, right? In your view, is Malaysia a safe place for women?
I think that's a hard no for me. And in saying this, I'm obviously comparing to standards in other countries that provide comprehensive, not just laws, but also enforcement framework, as well as efforts to address cultural, as well as, you know, traditional values that exist in society. And we're looking at countries like Singapore, New Zealand, and Australia. And if you compare those standards with the way things are done here in Malaysia, I don't think we are doing enough to make sure that women are safe. As well as, we also need to remember that when we talk about women, we also have to look at the issues holistically, right? We're not just talking about women who are in a certain class, for example. We have to literally look at, you know, from like, you know, the B40 groups all the way to T20, people in different demographics, people with different class, different race, different religion, and all of that. And figure out as to whether or not the standards of safety, do they feel equally safe everywhere that they live in? And I think assessing all of this, I don't think we're doing enough to keep women safe in Malaysia.
And when it comes to you know, culture, the way we talk about it, do we still expect women to bear more of that responsibility for their own safety?
Absolutely. I think if we look at conversations that are happening, not just online, but also offline, you know, in different communities, I think there's an unfair and disproportionate burden that we place on women to control issues relating to safety in their respective environment. And this is wrong for so many reasons. On top of my head, I think the first thing why this is so wrong is because it shifts the burden from law enforcement agencies to individual women, when issues of safety and their environment oftentimes is outside of their control. And secondly, I think what's really bad about this, it sort of like changes the narrative and it dismisses the narrative of collective safety. So when we look at the idea of social contract and how we are supposed to exist in a society together, and that there's different parts of society doing, you know, different things, taking up different roles to ensure this idea of collective safety. But when conversations focuses on, you know, conversations that focus on the idea that women are supposed to take up additional classes to defend themselves, or that they're supposed to do additional risk assessment mechanism to make sure that, you know, they are continuously protecting themselves, I think that is, you know, very, very unfair and disproportionate. But let's not forget, the biggest problem is still the fact that it creates and emboldens a culture of victim blaming that is already so, you know, so pernicious in our community.
With that said, I mean, has the conversation around safety and harassment shifted in recent years, or have you not seen it moving?
For sure it has shifted. For sure there are, you know, we're making progress, for sure. But I think the question is, are we making enough progress? Because we recently heard, you know, conversations about keeping women safe. We hear conversations on social media about how harassment can happen from the authorities and law enforcement officers themselves. So I think the way we are talking about it are changing, but I'm not sure that it's having a big enough impact, you know, in the entirety of Malaysia, for example. I suspect that in certain bubbles, in certain conversations, in certain segments of the society, probably the conversation is changing, but I'm not confident to say that, you know, everywhere in Malaysia, people are having similar conversations with a similar language when we're talking about women's safety.
Speaking of bubbles, one of the things that we are seeing happen on, especially the online space, is this shift towards let's educate men and boys rather than to keep telling women to stay safe. Do you think the fact that these conversations are happening, is this at least trickling down to society at large?
It's great that these conversations are happening. I think that's definitely a step in the right direction. When we talk about, you know, educating men and boys, as well as educating women themselves and girls, I think it's a conversation that has to happen hand in hand. So, for example, I think there's so many different areas in our society that we have to continuously educate every single member of society. And unfortunately, this conversation also still happens in a very gender binary context, men and women, right? And I think a lot of potentially minorities may be also left out of the conversation. And we also are missing out on opportunities to address issues that are potentially not seen as big enough. For example, things like doxing or things like stalking, things like stealthing issues or issues relating to consent. So I think, sure, educating men and boys is great and we should continuously do that. But I think we also have to make sure that these conversations are not just happening in a way that is generic to say that, you know, respect women or do more to protect women. Because I think the language and the content of these messages and campaigns have to be specific. Otherwise, it might contribute back to the same problem. I'll give an example. In one of the campaigns that I've seen in one of the schools where they're asking boys to, you know, to play a bigger role or to play a more active role into making sure that their female classmates feel safe, unfortunately, the language that is used might be interpreted as, oh, they may have to physically defend girls, for example, or they may have to, you know, use, you know, punch someone in order to make a woman feel safe or to make a girl feel safe. I don't think that's necessarily where the conversation should be as well, which is why I say as a society, it's very, very important to look at the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is when you want to create safety for women, it is about making sure that every single woman can access every single space within society, that they can participate equally, that they have equal access to do whatever it is that they wanted to do within these communities. So it's not just about physical safety. In this instance, we have to look at, you know, access to opportunities, access to enforcement, you know, court processes. We need to look at issues like underreporting of cases when it comes to violence against women, or the difficulty and prejudice when it comes to providing evidence, for example, and particularly look at why there is such low conviction rate for cases involving violence against women. For example, the last time I checked, the conviction rate for Malaysia for rape is about 2.7%, which is really low when you compare that to, you know, to other countries. So I think when we look at these conversations that we want to have in terms of educating men, educating parents, educating teachers, educational institutions, and all of these different actors in society, each of them has to play a specific and proactive role to make sure that meaningful changes are being made to every single aspect that I've listed out. So I think the campaign has to be more meaningful and it has to have a bit more meat to it, in my opinion.
Amelia, I wanted to touch on something that I think falls into that category, perhaps, of things that go unseen or unremarked upon. And some people argue, for example, that street harassment or catcalling is complimentary, it's harmless, it's just a way of, I don't know, you know, showing interest or whatever it may be. And in essence, mm-hmm. that when it's just words and not action, so no action has been taken, it's just people saying something, it's fine. How would you respond to that? And maybe you could also talk about how that can progress.
Firstly, that is such a wrong understanding on issues relating to violence against women. We have to understand violence doesn't necessarily mean that it is a physical force or it's a physical type of violence. Even if you look at our existing legal structures, when you look at, for example, our Domestic Violence Act, it is really not just about physical violence, right? We're looking at, is there like damage to property? Are you creating an environment that is threatening? Are you creating a situation where you're taking people for granted, you're exploiting individuals? And unfortunately, I think probably while these types of harms may not be as concrete, you cannot see, like you can't see like the harms, emotional harms and psychological harms as clearly as you can see a bruise, for example, we have to come to the realization that that does not mean these harms are A, made up, or B, not as serious as other forms of harm. So I think for people who are saying or potentially defending or justifying remarks or catcalling, like, you know, it's just words that is not as serious, I think these are the very individuals that have to A, educate themselves and understand the issue at hand, and B, I think potentially look at how what role they can play in terms of being better allies within spaces that they exist. Because ultimately in a society, when we talk about violence against women or issues of safety, it is not just about the victim and the perpetrator. That's the community around it that potentially allows things to happen. So ask ourselves, have we done enough to contribute to a culture that is safe? Maybe you're not doing the catcalling yourself. Maybe you're not giving these remarks yourself. But how is your behavior complicit in allowing this kind of culture and actions to happen to begin with? So I think we have to shift that conversation. And again, I want to repeat what I said earlier. I think education is really important, but we shouldn't place the burden on educating, you know, men, women, girls, on, you know, women's NGO or on schools per se. I think every single individual has to take up the role and responsibility to educate themselves on issues like this.
So on that note, what do you think the progress has been like on this from the government?
I think we were hoping for a lot of progress, I think. Whether or not, and we can see that a lot of things are still not done. For example, if we're talking about the sexual harassment bill, we have heard that, you know, this was supposed to be done in last year. We are hearing the same thing again, that potentially it will be discussed and tabled and debated in the next sitting. But I think we need more than empty promises like this. And I don't want to just also, you know, to talk about the sexual harassment bill. Let's talk about the gender equality bill. Let's talk about the stalking bill. There's also issues like, you know, tightening up laws relating to consent. There's also issues when women are not able to defend themselves properly in court when they are abused by, you know, in a relationship. We see recent statistics about how 3 out of 5 victims of domestic violence or violence in general, the perpetrator is someone that they know. So conversations surrounding issues like battered wife syndrome, for example, I think these are different areas of the law that we definitely need to look at. And if you're asking me whether or not I'm seeing enough progress to tighten up this law, to put like the right laws in place, the answer is no for me. I don't think there's enough progress on that front either.
Amelia, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.
That was Amelia Sharif, Chief Executive Editor of the G-Blog, talking to us about safety and women, particularly in terms of how we think and talk about it and why that matters. If you'd like to weigh in, let us know. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.